Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bo?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott?
Present.
Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski? Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. We'll move on to approval of the minutes from the March 10th meeting. Representative Erdahl, have you had an opportunity to review those minutes?
Yes, I have, and they were very fine minutes, and I move their approval as written.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Any discussion to the motion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are approved. Members, we're going to be taking up a number of amendments during this committee and just setting a time certain for closing comments and a vote on the DE1 amendment and the underlying bill as amended at 2:20 p.m. today. So to get us started, I will move House File 1081 to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. And I also move the DE1 amendment to get the amendment before the committee. And I will also move my A19 author's amendment to the DE1 to get the bill in the shape that I would like. Just a brief summary on the author's amendment. It deletes the section requiring homeschool parents to submit proof to the superintendent of the resident district, a copy of their student test scores, and proof that the necessary tests were administered in the correct school year. It also modifies a section from the Teachers of Color and Indigenous Teachers Act to match the language in the original bill related to the ethnic studies curriculum, by removing an option for school districts to offer culturally relevant curriculum instead of ethnic studies. And it ensures that the bill refers to Section 504 plans accurately rather than just calling them 504 plans. It clarifies language around the teacher evaluation and culturally responsive methodologies, and specifies that a district or charter school providing instruction or presentations on preventing suicide or self-harm must use either the resources provided by the commissioner or evidence-based instruction. And it also inserts a section from the governor's policy bill providing a definition of school libraries and school library media centers. So with that, any discussion to the motion to get the bill in the shape that I would like? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A19 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Members will work through all of the amendments that we have. As I said, we've got a number of them. We will start next with the A2 amendment. Representative Moeller, would you like to move your A2 amendment?
Yes, so moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Would you like to speak to your amendment, please?
Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair and members. So this has to do with the Seizure Smart Schools part of the bill, which was the bill that this committee heard. And there was some stakeholders concern over just some language clarification. And so basically this amendment clarifies that in two ways. One, it makes sure that we're being clear that the plan that's in place is for the regular school day and that doesn't cover any extracurricular activity time or before or after care. And that also we're very, meaning that it can cover a particular position at the school and not necessarily a named individual that has to have the requirements of the plan met. So that's what the amendment does, and the stakeholders are on board with this. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Members, any discussion to the Representative Mueller's motion related to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, if you could unmute yourself, members. Representative Mueller renews her motion to adopt the A2 amendment. All those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Mueller, I also have you with the A9 amendment. And my understanding is that you would like to move to divide the A9 amendment?
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair. So I would move that we divide the A9 amendment as follows. Everything before line 1.6 would be part one, and everything on line 1.6 would be part two.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Members, again, if you could unmute yourself, all those in favor of dividing the A9 amendment into two parts as described by Representative Mueller, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A9 amendment is divided into parts one and two. Representative Mueller, you may proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So with respect to part one, members, this part of the amendment really had to do with the graduation requirements in our bill, and it was related to the addition of one credit of physical education and the elimination of one of the elective credits. This came from an MDE bill. And as I looked at this, our bill in total with all the graduation requirements, I saw some inconsistencies and things throughout it, and it was really especially concerned about this full credit of physical education and what that would do for our students being able to take other classes they love, like music and world languages and CTE courses or AP courses. And so the original idea was that we would remove this from the bill, but after talking with MDE, it's my understanding that the legislature passed several years ago a requirement that schools follow the SHAPE requirement for physical education. And because of all of the different standards that have to be met with that, it's longer than a half credit, probably that schools are currently offering for physical education. However, MDE has offered to work with me on this language and the stakeholders. So I'm not wanting to remove it at this point from the bill, but I will be working with them to improve on these graduation standards before the next stop. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw part one of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. The A9 part one amendment is withdrawn. Representative Mueller, would you like to move the A9 part two?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. I'll move the A9 part two. And this part of the amendment has to do with when the financial literacy credit would need to be started. And in order to make it consistent with Representative Erdahl's civics requirement, which was starting in the 2022-2023 school year, I thought it would make sense that we use the same timeline for schools for the financial literacy portion of the bill. And so that's what part two of the amendment does.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Any discussion to the Mueller motion? Seeing none, Representative Mueller renews her motion to adopt the A9 Part 2 amendment. Members, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The A9 Part 2 amendment is adopted. Up next, we have the A4 amendment. Representative Edelson, would you like to move your A4 amendment?
Madam Chair, I would. The A4 is taken from House File 1029, which is Representative Tu Zhang's bill, and also Lead Erickson is a co-author of. This is a bill that's really about ensuring corrective action plans are followed in a timely manner. Currently, authorizers can be informed about a corrective action plan, and it can take weeks to years. This bill amends to say that a corrective action plan should happen within 130 days. And I ask members to support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Any discussion to the A4 amendment? Okay, hearing none. Rep. Edelson renews her motion to adopt the A4 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. The A4 amendment is adopted. Moving on to the A10 amendment, Representative Frazier, would you like to move your A10 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So moved, and I would like to a roll call on this amendment.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Frazier, to the motion. Can you describe the motion or describe the A10 amendment for us, rather?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I can. This amendment seeks to, this is in reference to House File 1376, but it seeks to allow for the pathway from the tier two licensure to the tier three. And it will allow that pathway for individual candidates that are within a particular shortage area. And a big emphasis is to make sure we address the issues that were raised by individuals that believe that you would be cutting out teachers of color that we so briefly, we do need to retain those teachers. So this creates a pathway to allow those teachers to access the tier three licensure area.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my team will oppose this. For the fact that even though the first part of the descriptor by Representative Frazier is good, this undermines the intent to allow every effective teacher to move up to Tier 3 if they hold the most valuable of all qualifications, which is proven effectiveness in the classroom. So my team will vote no.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Frazier, I'll give you the final word on your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I'm not sure how you're coming to that conclusion. If individuals meet the criteria and they are effective, they will be able to access this pathway and move on to Tier 3. So I disagree with your analysis there. And I would urge your support for this. I would urge those for members that truly believe that they want to create and maintain access and paths and retention for teachers of color, support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier renews his motion to adopt the A10. Representative Erickson, I see your hand is still raised. Did you have another comment?
No, I will lower my hand, sorry.
Representative Frazier renews his motion to adopt the A10 amendment, and a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes no.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Their votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Waslowick?
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski?
Ron, comma.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 7 nays. Yes.
We didn't talk about this.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Larson. The amendment is adopted. Next up, we have the A21-0082 amendment, and Representative Frazier, I understand that you also have the A21-0082 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier, to your amendment.
This amendment also goes back to House File 1376. It was after further conversation with Minnesota State Systems Office. There were some concerns about the language in terms of whether or not it would take away their ability to have their two-year transfer preparation programs. And after conversation with the stakeholders, that was not the intent. So we are moving to delete that language so there to clear up any confusion.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Any discussion to the Frazier motion? Seeing none, Representative Frazier renews his motion to adopt the A21-0082 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The A21-0082 amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Up next, we have the A17 amendment. Our Vice Chair Hassan, would you like to move your A17 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved. I will also request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Vice Chair Hassan, you may proceed with your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. A17 amendment is relating to House File 217, which is Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers. After having conversation with advocates, as well as community members, there was concern that was brought up that even though we're trying to increase teachers of color and American Indian teachers, there is no way to make sure that there is a retention in the classroom because of last one in is the first one out. And this amendment allows school districts to make an exception for teachers of color and American Indian teachers. And hopefully it's a compromise from all sides that this will help with to increase the retention rate for teachers of color and American Indian teachers.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hassan, I think your intent is well-meaning, but this is found in the collective bargaining unit, and they can already establish criteria other than seniority for unrequested leaves. And moreover, the exemption only applies if the union agrees, so my team will oppose this.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this forward. I'm really appreciative of the work you've done to increase teachers of color and work with everyone involved, especially teachers and their bargaining units. This is something that The Minneapolis Federation of Teachers in my district has worked on language similar to this in bargaining units, and they were told by management that this wasn't something that they were interested in. So contrary to what we've just heard, teachers have tried to bargain for this and have been shot down. So I think this is a really great way to build that buy-in from teachers and their bargaining units and make sure that the law is not getting in the way of bargaining to protect teachers and also other underserved communities from entering the profession. So thank you so much, Representative Hassan, for this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan, for bringing this bill. I don't think this is a big shift here. I think we should note that we're talking about local bargaining units, our teachers that are saying that they want to engage in a conversation of how to protect teachers of color, how to protect those teachers that are currently not consistently in line in a classroom with the actual population and demographics that we have of our students. So this is an important tool that will allow districts and local unions to negotiate that into the contract to protect teachers from layoffs. But it goes further than that. It also allows them to get to tenure sooner with this bill. And I think one of the things that's been happening, and I know this because I train around the state with local unions on how to draft language that is more equitable, that is more inclusive. And they're trying to have these conversations with districts, and districts have been hesitant because they believe they can't do this under law. This language is drafted in a way to allow them to do that legally. This language will inform districts that they can do that and hopefully facilitate more of those conversations, more of those bargaining units, and for them to use this language. So I happily support it. I think it's a big step forward in terms of how we can retain our teachers of color, and I hope members can see the momentum shift change here, and I hope the members, if you truly believe in protecting teachers of color and retaining teachers of color, you will vote for this.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick statement. Some conversations I've had with folks that I know back in my district who are in unions, they have concerns about this because they see it weakening collective bargaining overall. And so that is just a concern that I'm hearing from my union friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bull. Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to add that unions can already protect teachers of color if that's what they choose. So this is not a well-written amendment to accomplish what I think Representative Frazier wants.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Thank you, Representative Bowe. Representative Bowe, I am in contact with local units across the state, and that has not been an issue that's been raised. And this language absolutely does not weaken collective bargaining. It is something that would have to be agreed upon. That's one. So that they maintain the power to have those conversations to agree upon that. So that will not be an issue. And to Representative Erickson, it is not what I want. This is what local government, this is what teachers around the state are trying to engage in having these conversations. I think we have, again, I think we always kind of get lost and we look at the union as this kind of mythical thing out there. But the union is made up of teachers. They're made up of individual teachers, and they're speaking around this, and there's energy around this, and this is what they want. They want to protect their colleagues. They want to ensure their colleagues are protected and are in a classroom, providing effective classroom education and to our students. So I think we should pay attention, and I think we should listen, and I urge you all to vote and support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Vice Chair Hassan, I will give you the last word on your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, everyone, for your input. Let's not forget what is at the table. What's at the table is that we don't have enough teachers of color and American Indian teachers in our schools. And our students came to us and testified time and time again that they want teachers that look like them. They want people that can relate to their stories. They want people who have similar struggles, who can understand their pain. I remember our hearing a young woman, her name skips me right now, who talked about being 7 years old and asking her mom, "Mom, can I bleach my skin because I don't want to be black anymore?" Those are our students. Those are the people that we want to look out for. this isn't about unions. This isn't about anybody else. This is about protecting teachers of color and American Indian teachers, retaining them and making sure that the laws that are already in place do not get rid of them. There is no reason to increase teachers of color, American Indian teachers, if we can't keep them in the classroom and they're let go all the time. And this is the compromise language. This is something that the advocates, the community members agreed that this will protect teachers of color, American Indian teachers. And I hope you can support my amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Vice Chair Hassan renews her motion to adopt the A17 amendment, and a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Drozdowski? Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
No.
Representative Christensen? Representative Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Representative Drozdowski? Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 7 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson, up next we have your DE3 amendment. Would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I do move the DE3 amendment to your House File 1081 as it lays before us.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I understand that you'll be yielding some of your time to other members in your caucus while presenting your amendment. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, this is an amendment that the entire team worked on. Many of these are bills that were introduced by team members here from the GOP caucus in education policy. And so I want to give them a chance to explain that section of the Delete All Amendment. This amendment focuses on reopening and returning students to our schools. It empowers parents and students, as you can see from some of the article titles. It also protects our teachers and the recruiting and keeping effective teachers. That's very important to us, is also an article in this bill. And so with your permission, Chair Richardson, I will begin to yield to my fellow members and they will explain that part of the amendment. And so under Article 1, Reopening and Returning Students to School, I yield to Representative Poston.
Thank you, Lee Derrickson. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Article 1, I want to talk to Section 1 in Article 1. It's House File 1051, authored by Ron Kreisha. This section repeals the governor's authority to use emergency powers to close schools or alter school schedules with his peacetime emergency powers. So this makes a change in Chapter 12. It is leaving the control locally, which I think is very important because our local schools know how to handle these things better than anybody in St. Paul or better than the governor. So with that, I'll yield back to Lee Derrickson.
Thank you, Representative Poston and Chair Richardson. We will want a roll call on this. So just to make sure that that's in place. The next part of this amendment authorizes school districts and charters to implement learning models for on-site hybrid or distance learning with a parental option for distance learning. This really establishes local control for our districts and charters to choose what works best for them in their communities and in whatever condition they find themselves. It establishes an option for parents to also request distance learning during the regular school year. It also allows schools to use distance learning days in response to inclement weather, natural disaster, or a public health hazard. You know, current law allows us to use up to 5 e-learning days for inclement weather, but this would build on that law to allow districts to use any number of distance learning days for situations in which distance learning would be safer. Finally, it allows schools to hire qualified non-licensed educators for summer education programs. These programs, including summer school, summer academies, summer tutors, and other innovative or creative solutions that our schools can employ to remediate the learning loss from the school shutdowns, should not be limited by a lack of staff waiting for a license to be issued by a state board when we have clearly defined in state law what constitutes a qualified educator. And with that, Madam Chair, I yield to Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair, and to Representative Erickson. The next section is talking about a pilot program that is House File 699. This is a pilot program that would allow our school districts with a little bit more flexibility to hire substitute teachers. As we know, substitute teachers are in great demand and there's a shortage all over the place. My bill received a hearing in the Senate, and during that time, I heard from both my hometown in Austin, but also from Anoka Hennepin, who told me in March alone that they were experiencing 100 teacher shortages when it comes to substitute teachers. And this, when that happens, that requires that a teacher is then able, is then asked to cover another classroom. And as we know, as teachers, as I have been a teacher for almost 2 decades, when a teacher is required or has been asked to cover another class and does not receive their prep time, this not only hurts them, but it also hurts the students. So this bill would allow school districts to use the professional standards that that are in place for Tier 1 CTE teachers. And the school district can look at a person who either has 5 years of experience in a field that is that the school district says is important, has a 2-year degree, or has a certification of some kind. And that then the school district is pending a completed background check, a successful background check, that this school district is able to then hire that teacher or that person as their substitute teacher. Again, this is a bill that gives the school districts more direct access to the pool of people who could be substitute teachers. And I've heard plenty of testimony from school districts that talk about how difficult it is to find substitute teachers and how important, even when the qualifications for a substitute teacher at this point, when that is a 4-year degree, that is very difficult for them to find someone who isn't already employed. And what we know is that as education has changed and we have a little bit more online presence, I know, and I won't go too much farther into this, but I know that when a teacher is absent, possibly suddenly, that there still is a great deal of resources for that teacher to have lessons and activities online, and that the person that's present in the room doesn't have to be teaching in the classroom. They do need to be a presence, and they do need to be a person that can foster relationships. And so this allows the school district to really hire people in their community that will foster relationships and not be burdened with some of the extra regulations that is that LSB and MDE has required. With that, I would like to yield my time or yield to Representative Bennett.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for bringing forth these provisions. I would like to just address a certain portion in this provision that deals with the innovation research zones that are in current session law. What this provision does in this amendment is add more flexibilities, gets rid of red tape, and adds more local control by repealing the requirement that innovations be presented and approved by MDE as research projects. We all know that we need to address the learning loss and move forward from the school closures that students have had to deal with, and we want to open up more opportunities to close the achievement gap that we're well aware of. I believe that adjusting some of the components of the innovation zones will help schools have more, or empower schools to have more strategies to deal with these things and help make up student loss and also close the achievement gap. I think that pretty much describes it, so I'm going to yield to Representative Scott next.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. And what I would like to emphasize is the next section, and it's House File 351, which I offered on behalf of Anoka Hennepin School District, the school district that I represent and the largest in the state. And what it calls for is suspending the academic standards review, revision, and implementation until June 1st, 2022, so that the Department of Education and the schools can focus their time and efforts and resources on getting kids caught up from learning loss. And in addition to pushing everything out by a year, this also saves our school districts, at least for Anoka Hennepin, it saves them $2 to $5 million per subject matter in staff development and materials. So it's a cost savings to the school. But more importantly, right now, it is going to buy them the needed time, hopefully it's all the time they need, to catch students up from learning loss. And last night on the floor, I spoke to a constituent that I've been in contact with. And in mid-February, his high school students, since the beginning of the pandemic last year, had only been in class 6 days. And so, his kids are the lucky ones. You know, they have parents that are involved, and his kids did okay with distance learning, but many have not. And so we want to abide as much time as we can and as needed for our school district to get our kids caught up. So with that, members, I yield back to Representative Erickson. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott, for that explanation. The next couple of sections deal with the Department of Education. We want them to be helping to measure student learning loss. We know this is real and it's severe, but there has to be a means to measure that loss so that we're not, you know, preventing our students from moving forward. And, you know, it needs to be targeted. And so this provision would support students-based measurements on their needs. The other section requires MDE to plan for administration of the MCAs regardless of the student's learning model, and a process for remote administration if that is also necessary. As you know, the Biden administration has continued to say that federally mandated standardized assessments, which is federal accountability, need to be given this spring. And so MDE needs to have a plan for doing that. So that's what this section does. In addition, we know that Access has been administered and that even some ACT tests have been administered. So this is not something new for the department. They just need to make sure that districts and charters understand that there's a process for providing this testing or for a remote administration. And with that, Madam Chair, we move to Article 2, empowering parents and students. These are also from bills that have been introduced but not heard in committee. But the first section is that parents have a right to choose a high-quality, culturally affirming education for their children, regardless of where their zoned public school exists. They should be able to choose the school that meets the needs of their children, including the right to choose a charter school without artificial barriers. When parents vote with their feet, the schools provide the programs, the curriculum, and the instruction that parents value for their children. The next section gives parents the right to request a change of teacher for their child if another teacher is available. The right of a parent to direct the education of their child should not be limited to a building in which the child will sit or a classroom, but should include the teacher leading that instruction. I recognize there are limitations on teachers within certain subject areas. As you know, I was a high school English teacher, and so, you know, I brought a certain expertise to the classroom that perhaps someone else did. So the language allows practicality. Ultimately, we want parents and students, not union contracts, to dictate who should be teaching our children. The next section requires the world's best workforce plan to include strategies to identify and reduce disparities in student discipline and strategies for integrating or improving character and citizenship education. We have long had in law character education as well as citizenship, and these are very good strategies to use in dealing with the behaviors of our children. My Mille Lacs, for example, my Mille Lacs School District has used character education ever since it was enacted into law. And I send every week congratulatories to students who have accomplished what the teacher observes as a character trait that stands out in their performance and in their behavior. Disciplinary disparities, we know, are real. And I know that your committee, Representative Richardson, has a different approach from us. But we believe that policies, you know, that are adopted by school boards or charters can be behind the disparities. And so they need to make the changes, not the state. You know, how we solve the issues is best left to the district or to the charter. So in their world's best workforce planning, which requires community input, teacher input, administrator input, and parent input, districts and charters can adopt these policies to align with the needs of their community and their students. And of course, as I said earlier, teaching children respect, self-responsibility, how to be honest, and other character qualities will also help to reduce disparities in discipline. Next, the school dismissal policies, that's the next section. And in it, we must include informing students of their rights, including the right against self-incrimination, allowing students facing possible dismissal to have a parent request, or excuse me, a parent present during any questioning by school staff, and to require a record of school employees making referrals. You know, one way to reduce disparities in disciplinary outcomes is to make sure that all students know their rights and that they have their best advocate, a parent or a guardian or someone who's responsible for them present when staff questions them on any policy violation that could lead to a suspension or an expulsion. Importantly as well, policies don't dismiss students. These decisions are made by adults. We need to know, let's be honest, if there are some bad actors in our classrooms or in our hallways targeting students of color or our American Indian students. We can go to the disciplinary files at PELSV, our Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board, And some of the stories of how educators have treated their students are just sickening. So we know that that's an area that we need to look more closely at. Next section codifies the Code of Ethics for teachers. This is also a bill that I've introduced several times, in fact, and includes a standard against discriminatory conduct and gives parents the right to file a complaint for any Code of Ethics violation through their school district. The Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board has in rule, the Code of Ethics for teachers. But that code in this amendment is improved with more specific professional standards on anti-discrimination and prohibiting sexual contact with a student. And we know from testimony from students of color in particular, that they felt they were discriminated against. And that is the first principle in the code, the Teacher Code of Ethics. We need to have a clear avenue toward filing an ethics complaint as well to help address potential misconduct. So parents, have that ability if this proposal in this section is adopted. Parents with children are allowed to form a charter school. This is something that we've been thinking about, my team and I, for some time. This would be different from what's presently in law. This would have parents with children form a charter school, because right now it's parents and a teacher, at least one teacher. But we have found in the pandemic that so many parents have found that they need more control over the education of their children, and they cannot have their children's education held hostage to special interests. So we think that this would be a great way to provide more charter schools. They are highly regarded in our state in which former Senator Amber Reichert Jung began them in about 1990, and they came in under the late Governor Rudy Perpich, who was such a great reformer. And as you know, he was a Democrat, but I loved working with him. Even though I was not serving at the time, I was a teacher in a classroom, and he included me in some discussions that were held on, what direction do we go now to provide another public choice? And so the discussion on charters was just amazing. And I will never forget his comments on providing our children with these choices. So this is another avenue to pursue. Finally, in this section, it prohibits school employee contracts from containing any protections against discipline or termination for school employees who engage in immoral, unethical, or illegal actions. I think this provision speaks for itself, and I yield to Representative Bo, who will talk about school lunch shaming.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This section does talk about lunch shaming. This section prohibits practices known as school lunch shaming, including taking away a meal already served, and also prohibits denying a free meal to an eligible child. This does not prohibit schools from collecting unpaid debts. A couple of thoughts to share. Number one, sometimes parents don't pay their bills. And while that is a problem for schools, the financial dispute between a school and a parent should stay between the school and the parent. Thought number two, the repeated stories of children having their food taken away and even thrown into the trash is simply unacceptable. It doesn't pay a debt. It simply throws more money into the trash, and it embarrasses the student. Finally, thought number three, this amendment is similar to what the governor proposed, but is based on a bill from my friend, Representative Juergens. It would require school meal policies to be clear, meals to be served to students in a respectful manner, and it would end the practice known as meal dumping. I thank you for your time, and I will yield to Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Dangerously low proportions of the public understand and trust our democratic institutions. Majorities are functionally illiterate on our constitutional principles and forms. The relative neglect of civic education the past half century is a period of wrenching change, is one important cause of our civic and political dysfunction. I do appreciate that my provisions on civics were included in Chair Richardson's bill. As you've heard me explain many times, We are failing to adequately educate students in how our government works. It's either not being taught or it's being taught in a grade where the students are not ready to learn. That's why teaching civics to students as juniors or seniors is important. Also, civics has diminished in relevance with emphasis on other courses and no specific credit assignment. Therefore, it's important to add back credit requirement. The goal here is to enhance the relevance of civics and make it meaningful to our graduates. Once again, thank you, Chair Richardson, for recognizing how important this is. Another provision that I'd like to talk about deals with protecting teachers. I had a bill, House File 1471, dealing with this. All too often, we hear of incidents where teachers are assaulted by students. I know of a teacher who was picked up and seriously injured when dropped to the floor by a first grader. She was a pretty big first grader, and she wasn't a very large lady. Other teachers that I've talked to have been kicked and punched by students. This amendment from my bill would require teachers who are victims of an assault by a student to receive a copy of the report on that assault. This just gives the teacher a written record of the occurrence. It also requires students assaulting school staff to be removed from class for at least 3 school days following the incident, and requires students be given assistance to prevent the behavior from reoccurring. For the good of both the teacher and the student, the reasons for the incident and assistance for remediating behavior need to be acted on. This is not suspension or exclusion, just a time to work out remedies to make the classroom safer for both the teacher and the student. Paraprofessionals working alone or on a regular basis with a special education student should be notified of any history of violent behavior. It's simply a right to know to help ensure the safety of the worker and the student. This also includes a provision for educator rights to be coded in statute. This bill has been heard in the Senate, and I would hope that some elements of this can be considered as the process continues. And with that, I yield to Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Representative Erickson, and thank you, Madam Chair. Our last article is Article 4, entitled Recruiting and Keeping Effective Teachers. These are provisions that you would have heard in an amendment from me, but in finance, it's a bill that is authored by Representative Lisa Damuth. So I present this as an amendment in our delete all on behalf of Representative Damuth. First of all, the definition of a professional license includes tiers 1, 2, 3, and 4. We have heard some comments in the field or by PALSB that tier 1 is not professional, but it is professional. Given the percentage of tier 1 and tier 2 teachers who are educators of color, it is simply an insult to refer or view their accomplishments as anything other than professional. Next, it repeals the requirement for schools to first try to hire a tier 2, 3, or 4 teacher before hiring or redoing a tier 1 teacher. You know, only 5% of tier 3 or 4 teachers are teachers of color versus 21% of tier 1 and tier 2. Yet the law requires school districts to first try to hire from a pool of educators in which only 5% are identified as teachers of color or indigenous. Therefore, the current law effectively requires districts to try to hire an educator that is probably white before they can consider hiring a teacher of color. The next provision allows Tier 1 and 2 licenses to have unlimited renewals. Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses were originally given limited renewals as part of the agreement that I made while negotiating this bill back some years ago when the tiered system was first developed. Since this new system was established, which was in 2018, we have seen the quality of the Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers really please those who are hiring them. And so we want districts and charters to have that ability. While we designed the tier system to be a system through which an educator could progress, We recognized in certain cases some educators prefer to remain at the present tier, and as long as they are performing at the satisfaction of a district or the charter, they should be able to continue there. Next, we would repeal the requirement for Tier 4 licensed applicants to complete a teacher prep program. There should be no delusions that educator preparation programs are a substitute for proven experience in the classroom. Additionally, we have heard from too many educators lamenting that they didn't learn in their preparation programs, for example, how to teach reading from the scientific approach. A Tier 3 teacher with 3 years of experience, effective experience, should not be denied a five-year license simply because they lack a program certificate. Next, this bill that Representative Damuth introduced and was heard as an amendment previously prohibits using seniority in the hiring or dismissing of a teacher, effectively banning the last in, first out, and requires districts to report new hires and dismissals by race and ethnicity. You know, virtually every discussion we've had, including testimony before the House Select Committee on Racial Justice, which Representative Richardson chaired, advocates from communities of color noted that policies commonly referred to last in, first out have a negative, disparate impact on educators of color. Minnesota has the distinction for a number of teachers of the year even being dismissed because their hiring date was more important than their value or quality as a teacher. Next section, we prohibit unrequested leave of absence policies from prioritizing Tier 1 or Tier 2 educators for layoffs. Teacher contracts or school district policies that do this dismissal of educators based on their tier, especially targeting Tier 1 or 2, have a contrary effect on increasing teachers of color when Tier 1 and 2 licensed teachers are more likely to be educators of color or of Indigenous background. Next, it expands the scope of the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Program. We recently heard the audit of this, and so in studying this, we determined there needed to be some changes. So that would include assisting teachers to meet the requirements of Tier 1 and 2 licenses, not only Tier 3, and includes alternative teacher preparation programs and repeals preference for existing providers to make the grants truly competitive. The current grant recipients are metro-based, Augsburg, Concordia, St. Paul, Hamlin, Metropolitan State, St. Mary's, and St. Thomas. When the need of teachers of color is statewide, alternative teacher preparation programs were enacted to help improve the access for potential teachers of color and should be included in this program. Next and finally, we expand the scope of the Grow Your Own Pathway to Licensure Grant Program to allow partnering with alternative teacher preparation programs. Current law limits grants to non-conventional programs, which are higher ed institution based. Similar to the collaborative grants, alternative teacher preparation programs should not be excluded from the Grow Your Own program. Madam Chair and committee, in closing, it has been nearly a year since Governor Walz closed our schools and started us on this journey of distance and hybrid learning. 1 year later, only 40% of our districts have returned to full in-person learning. The governor cannot even tell us how many students are actually attending in-person classes on any given day of the week, even in his latest announcement. As we move forward, we need to address learning loss. We need our schools to have more flexible programs, and we need policies that value teachers of effectiveness, not just seniority. We can pretend that everything will return to normal as the pandemic continues to ease, as this bill your House file, Representative Richardson, pretends. Or we can recognize that the face of education is now forever changed and start addressing that reality for our students and parents. With that, again, Madam Chair, I request a roll call and ask for a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. We have a number of hands up. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Erickson, I just want to be very clear that I have many concerns with the amendment that is before us. One of the most concerning, though, for me is the one that essentially gives, or what we would call school choice. It is incredibly, when we look at history, what has happened, going down this path has shown us this is not a good idea. When Brown versus Board of Education was passed, a lot of schools throughout the United States closed. They wanted their kids to have choice. What they didn't say is that they didn't want their kids to be in school with Black kids. And so the reality is if we start sectioning off and doing essentially vouchers, which is what I feel like this legislation is kind of aiming to do, giving students the choice to weaken our strong public schools in the state of Minnesota. People come to Minnesota because of our public schools, because they are good schools, and because they have strength, because they have parents from all walks of life that really fight to make sure that they are good. And so I strongly oppose this amendment for that specific provision and ask members to stand with me in opposition.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Erickson, we've got a number of hands up, and so I'm going to go to the next individual on the list. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question for Representative Erdahl on his piece of the amendment. Is that in order?
Please proceed, Representative Berg.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl, we've seen in study after study that taking young children, such as your part of the amendment that talks about a first grader in your story there, being removed from the classroom for up to 3 days. I'm wondering why you've included that in your piece of the amendment when we know that that is part of what contributes to the opportunity gap and is highly discriminatory towards children of color.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Berg, to me, it has nothing to do with color, but with the child and with the teacher. I'm not asking that the child, in my amendment, that the child be removed permanently or excluded from the class permanently. What I'm saying here is that there must be a reason why the violence was committed against the teacher or to some other student or whatever in the classroom, and that then you need to step back and take a look at why. Maybe this child needs some help that's not being addressed, and that's what this is about, trying to find a way to help the child to determine what the problem is and then get the child back in the classroom.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for answering. We do know that children of color are disproportionately removed from the classrooms. There's very little argument on that and a pile of evidence. And we also know that removing them from the classroom piles upon shame, and they wonder why they're different than other students. I appreciate you wanting to protect the teachers. This is not the way. Members, in addition to Representative Edelson's remarks, I would urge you to vote no in this amendment because of that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my comments are directed at lines 13.11 to 13.12. This was something Representative Erickson discussed about a parent has the right to request a change of teacher for their child in public school unless no other teacher is available. And I'm just curious, Representative Erickson, if parents are already forbidden from at least making that request, can't they already ask a school if they wanted to change their teacher?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Mueller, yes, I think to a certain extent. But what we have heard during the pandemic is the fact that, especially during distance learning, parents felt that if there was the ability for them to request a different instructor for their child, that there would have been some success or at least some satisfaction on their part. So this is here to provide a directive that parents do have the right for this, even though a school policy might allow it. We think strongly that this is protecting a parent's ability to direct the education of their children.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer, Representative Erickson. So if parents can already request right now that a teacher be changed for their student, then I think this is putting a huge burden on the schools and possibly moving in the direction where their schools would have to be required to honor such requests. I can't even imagine the logistical nightmare for that. Plus, there are also no requirements here about when that request can be made. Is it made at the beginning of the school year? Is it made halfway through the school year? Is it made with 2 weeks left? I just think like this is completely impractical, and I would vote no for this amendment for a number of reasons, but especially this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Erickson, I don't know if you had a response to that.
Madam Chair and Representative Mueller, we have heard the stories, especially from parents of children of color during this distance learning. And, you know, we wanted to respond to that concern. And that is one way that we can enable parents to have that right. So it's there so it can bring strength to parents' rights.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Mueller, I'm assuming you're done. Okay. Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions. I'm going to try to be brief. I know time is of the essence. My first question is for Rep. Mueller. You talked about sub-teachers. Our substitute teachers are poorly paid. They have no health coverage and no worker cam to pay them if they catch COVID-19. Would you consider incentivizing subs to be paid more to get health coverage and workers cam?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for the question. It's an interesting question that you raise, and I'll answer it in a couple of ways. Number one, I have testimony from my human resources director back in Austin, who talks about how much it would actually cost the school to actually accomplish what you're asking. The other thing about short call substitutes is that short call subs are often only in a place for one day at a time. So what you're asking is to have someone who may or may not have a job that day to have benefits of something of a same person who has a contract. A substitute teacher doesn't have a contract. They have a flexibility of being able to say, yes, I'll work, or no, I won't work that day. Now, I understand when I say that, it sounds like, oh, you're contradicting yourself because of the fact that there are such a shortage, so they could be working all the time. But the beauty of being a substitute teacher is that this allows people who have other responsibilities, other phases of their lives, to be able to go and just get a little extra income. Are they paid a lot for the job that they do? No. Could we raise it? That's up for our local schools to decide. But what I have heard from several of my colleagues, especially the people back in my district, is that the goal of a substitute teacher is to make sure that we have people from our community coming in and forming a relationship with these students. And so it would be rather impractical for a school district to provide the same benefits as a contracted teacher for an individual that would come in for maybe 1 or 2 days whenever is necessary. So, Chair.
Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Mueller. So in other words, we want to sacrifice our sub teachers because we don't want to provide them, but we want to put them in risk situations because you could catch, you might be there for one day, but you could catch COVID in a matter of minutes, depending on where you're at. Moving along.
Can I respond to that, Chair?
Representative Mueller, Vice Chair Hassan has the floor at the moment. Vice Chair Hassan.
I am a parent of who has a student a Black student in this public school. And there has been multiple conversations in this amendment that has been echoed. Teachers, you know, parents of color are asking for this, and parents of color are asking for that and the other. As someone who is a product of public school and is raising a child who is in public school, I want to tell you that there is no parent of color or Black parent or Indigenous parent that want their kid to be suspended. Suspension is, or you know, expulsion is one of the biggest problems why we have the disparities that we have. And I'm disappointed that this includes, you know, a version of this amendment talks about removing a child from the classroom for several days. I'm also disappointed that Rep. Erickson talks about teachers of color on this amendment, yet voted down my amendment to increase and retain teachers of color and keep them in the classroom. So for that, I will not be able to vote and in support of this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Representative Mueller, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Chair. I think that what has to be said is that when we talk about a couple of things, to say that I want to sacrifice teachers is a pretty strong language to say. The role of a substitute teacher is that they have the choice of if they want to go into a classroom. If they feel like they are going to be exposed to COVID-19, they don't have to go in. And I would like to say, as a person who has been teaching through the pandemic, that the ways that the school has went above and beyond to protect their teachers with masks, with many barriers, with having hybrid, with making sure everyone stays 6 feet away. Honestly, these type of situations are very different from when I was teaching before COVID-19, and we had plenty of other students coming in very sick, touching me, touching desks, touching materials. There's plenty of protection for our teachers, including our substitute teachers, when they decide to come in. And when we talk about school choice, we think that public school should be a quality choice. We believe that this should be a choice that parents should make. All we're asking is that they are able to have a choice when they feel like public school is not that choice for their student. I find it amazing as a teacher who has been a teacher for the past 20 years that I have been asked as a teacher to provide differentiation to every single child that I have, and I have up to 150 students at a time, and yet we have one system that decides that is going to be the best for their children. And so for that, I thank you for listening to my comments, and I would still ask you to vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Frazier.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. I think this is a pretty ineffective way to roll out all of these amendments. Makes it tough, and it was a lot to go through. But the issue with having, or the proposal to have summer school teachers in these programs that are proposed to help our kids catch up from some of the things they've lost, and particularly students of color, who already had gaps before we had the pandemic, and now those gaps are for sure to be exacerbated. But we're saying that we want to have teachers, just anyone, could come in and not be proven to be effective in any form, any shape or form, with any kind of credentials or skill sets, we don't know. But those individuals would come in, and we let them in the summer school in these summer school programs that we're going to need and we're likely going to have and fund. But we let them in those summer school programs, and those individuals are going to be responsible for helping our kids catch up. And what I don't understand is I continue to hear conversations around effectiveness and quality when we talk about retaining teachers of color. Yet we offer bills to retain teachers of color, and you vote them down. And each time you talk about, well, it's not going to be, those aren't going to, it can't, that can't ensure that they're going to be effective. So my question has to be, are you saying that any teacher cannot be effective because we can't show that? Or are you concerned that teachers of color are not going to be effective if you allow them to be retained with the emphasis on equity to retain them. And I have to keep asking myself that question because it feels like we're talking about one set of rules to allow a certain group in, but another set of rules to exclude another group. And I'm really concerned about that. So I can't support this amendment because I don't think it's an amendment that is focused, that is very zeroed in and focused on what our students of colors need, our student of colors need. And we have heard that time and time again from the communities, from the students that have testified. And each time after they testify, you know, we get a delete all amendment that totally ignores everything they said. And I just got to point that out because it is not appropriate. It's not right. You can't continue to have the rhetoric that you care about students of colors, kids of colors, parents of colors, communities of color, and then have a delete all amendment to take away everything that they say they want when it is offered up and the law to codify it to make sure that they get what they need to be successful. We got to stop doing this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. And just a time check, we are going to, we still have a roll call to do, and we also have closing comments that need to happen as well. And so we are going to take two more hands here. I have Representative Erdahl and then Representative Jordan will close us out before I give Representative Erickson last words on her amendment. Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to go back to Representative Berg's question again. First of all, I don't care what color the person is, the child is, who is punching or otherwise abusing a teacher, they need help. And in the case that I referenced where a teacher was picked up and dropped, nothing happened to that child, and he didn't get any help. The teacher was hospitalized, and her career was ended. Now, what I'm trying to do is talk about protecting teachers and getting children who may have a violent nature to them some help. And it just leaving them in the classroom, I want to get them back right away. It's only 3 days, but maybe there's something that can be done to assess the situation and get some help to the child. And that's what this is about, protecting teachers and helping the children who need the help. Thank you.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion today. I have a few questions for the bill's author, if that's okay. And please feel free, Madam Chair, if I go over, I have many, many, many questions about this amendment, so please feel free to cut me off if I'm taking up too much of the committee's time. But my first question to the bill's author is regarding the part in 21.12 where we talk about immoral and unethical behavior. I don't see that defined in statute. I also don't see immoral or unethical defined in the teacher code of conduct. So who would be the one determining whether something is immoral or unethical?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, any complaints about teachers goes to the PELSB board, the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board, and they're the ones that determine in finality whether or not this was unethical or immoral behavior. But if it is brought as a local complaint, it then is reviewed by the administration and it is forwarded to PELSB if that is indeed the right path to follow. That's been going on forever, whether we had a board of teaching or we have PELSB, complaints about teachers. We know that, I don't know if you get these reports, but I get them every week or every time PELSB meets, I get reports of teachers who have been suspended or whose licenses have been revoked or who have been given a stipulation agreement. So that is in the hands of the professionals on that board. Who particularly deal with behavior issues that come to them from school districts or charters in regard to their staff.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if an administrator thought that something, so it would be up to the administration to decide when to forward things to PELSB. So for example, if an administration was, if an administrator or a school board was had different values from a teacher, like let's say, for example, they were upset about a teacher display or teacher or school staff engaging in who is married to someone of their gender and the administrator did not like that they could remove the bargaining under this language. They could remove the bargaining unit protection for that employee and refer them to Pelsby for immoral behavior. Is that something that would be permitted?
Representative,
that's local control, Madam Chair, and Representative Jordan. That's up to the locals, but I don't think that that kind of discrimination goes on. It has to be in regard of teachers having maybe a relationship with a student. That is what we hear most about, and that's what we read in the newspapers and see on television. You know, those are not permitted interactions. Staff is professional. Teachers know that. So if they cross that line, a complaint could be filed if that knowledge is known from either the student. And sometimes the student brings it years later. I'm sure you have read about those situations. You know, principals or administrators or whomever doesn't just indiscriminately file complaints. They file complaints based on what is an expected behavior of a professional who they have hired to be a teacher or an administrator or in another capacity in the school.
Representative Jordan.
Well, Madam Chair, school boards and administrators do discriminate against educators and other employees of schools. And I have seen in many locals across the state where teachers, for example, where teachers of color have been marked down for professionalism or for LGBTQ educators have been dinged for professionalism if they display wedding pictures. So Representative Erickson is incorrect in removing the bargaining unit's ability to represent these educators when they are talking about discrimination is a pretty egregious attack on these workers, in my opinion. But I have some other questions to move on to other sections as well, if that's okay.
And Representative Jordan, I will ask you to limit yourself to one more question so we can get to the roll call. And then we also have to move to closing comments. We also have another vote as well.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So then my other question goes down to 23.27. I think it's great that we're notifying ESPs and paraprofessionals about students' needs. I think it's very concerning to me that we, with this DEA language, we've removed the ability to train and provide the training for paraprofessionals that was included in the original bill. So I think it's odd that we would tell an ESP or a paraprofessional that a student has extra needs, but give them no tools to actually serve that student. But my question is why are we only limiting this to teachers who are already covered and then paraprofessionals as well? Why are we extending this to all school employees who might be interacting and serving the student? One group that comes to mind is bus drivers, for example. Why aren't we providing tools and resources for bus drivers to learn about student history as well?
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And Representative Erickson, briefly, please.
Madam Chair, it just happens to be the statute that we're amending because of a concern that we've heard about paraprofessionals assigned to work alone or on a regular basis with a student with a disability. We want protection for them. And you just have to amend another part of the statute if you want the training to occur, which I think you have done in your bill. So that's my answer.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And also, briefly, last word on your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for indulging my team. Apparently, many of you do not realize that this is standard procedure, that if you were in the minority, you would also bring forth either separate amendments or a delete all, because you want to get your perspective across to the legislators who are listening, parents who are listening, school officials, and the public. I mean, this is what we do. So in summary, Madam Chair and committee, this is our proposal, our delete all to yours, because this is the way that we look at reopening our schools, recovering the lost learning, and closing the achievement gap. We also include protecting our teachers and having a way to recruit and retain them. So thank you very much, and I ask for a yes vote.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Erickson. We're going to have to move forward with the roll call.
I'd like to change the motion to where this bill goes next. By adopting the A-17, it has data practices provisions, and the bill now needs to go to the Judiciary Data Practices Committee because of those provisions in the A17 that was put on the bill. When we get to that, I know we're just on the,
yes,
I guess, yeah, I'm sorry, we're just on our amendment. My apologies.
A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Hassan?
No.
She's home.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski?
Yes.
Representative Bennett?
Yes.
Representative Berg?
Help.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Frazier?
Nah.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keeler?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasliwick?
No.
Madam Chair, there are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. The DE3 amendment is not adopted. We have just a few moments left. I got a couple of closing comments before we will move on to my motion to adopt the DE1 and to re-refer the bill. We know in Minnesota that we have some of the worst disparities in the nation as it relates to education. And this bill is about taking some steps forward to address that. And part of the challenge we know is the lack of diversity within the teaching workforce that we have. And that lack of diversity is the result of a legacy of push-out. Of BIPOC teachers. After Brown versus Board of Education, there were 38,000 Black teachers who lost their jobs. More than 90% of Black principals and administrators lost their jobs. In the 80s, there were 21,000 Black teachers who were lost with new requirements under licensure statutes. The push-out continues, as we have seen, high-quality teachers of the year lose their jobs as well. We know that all students do better when there are diverse teachers in the classroom. And so when we're talking about the diversity of our classrooms, it's not for diversity's sake, it's because all students do better. We also know that if students aren't in the classroom to learn, they're not going to meet developmental milestones, and we'll continue to see these disparities. And we continue to see Black, Indigenous students, and students with disabilities disproportionately pushed out of our classroom. The mental health pandemic in this country existed pre-COVID, it exists now, and it will exist post-COVID as well. So the mental health pieces, the trauma-informed pieces, are key components to moving forward as well. So, and I've got 2 motions to make here. One, I renew my motion to adopt the DE1 amendment as amended, and the clerk will take the roll on the adoption of the DE1 amendment.
Madam Chair, as amended, correct?
To adopt the DE1 amended amendment as amended. Thank you.
I did not hear you say as amended. It has to be as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Erickson. Members, if you could unmute yourself, all those in favor of adopting.
I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Ms. Larson, please take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bow? Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Adelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Mohler?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No. Happy birthday, Representative Feist.
Representative Wasluwick?
Yes.
Representative Bow?
No.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
Thank you. The amendment is adopted. I renew my motion to re-refer House File 1081 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No. No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bow?
No.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Adelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Mohler?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasluwick?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
On a vote of 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is re-referred to the Education Finance Committee, and we stand adjourned.